Hello, and welcome to the fifth installment of the Page Bacon Podcast, where we talk about everything and anything related to the written word. I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And we're happy as hell to have my good friend Gypsy Rowley in the house to talk about her new novel, Sully Beach and the Dying Light, which has been hit with a barrage of well-deserved rave reviews. Gypsy, thanks for stopping by.
Hi.
Hi.
To give our listeners a sense of the story, I'd like to do something new and give the author a chance to read a short segment from Sully Beach, if you wouldn't mind.
I wouldn't mind. Okay. Here it is. Sully imagined she was the most alone of all. How could people all love each other and still somehow at the end of the day end up in their own dark little rooms with their dark little thoughts and no one to hold them and say, I understand. It didn't seem right. You're not alone. Sully's eyes flew open. A voice, a distinct voice, a voice she knew. A tiny white star appeared in the center of the loft. It began to grow and spread, fiery tendrils shooting out and licking the rafters, ripples and splashes swirling the shadows out of the corners. Sully expected Papa to come running up the ladder, but the downstairs was silent and still the light grew. It grew until it engulfed the little room, eating away at the defining edges in unbearable brightness, and just when Sully thought she might go blind, it softened to an ethereal glow, and Sully saw her. Long golden chestnut hair settling in delicate ringlets around her sharp, pale face, thin but elegant arms reaching out, large enigmatic hazel eyes, the serene smile that turned up just a little bit more at one corner than the other. There was no doubt. Mama? Hello, Sully. I've missed you.
Yeah. Woo! I also want to mention that we have Kelly McAllister here, who was responsible for editing the book for Gypsy.
Woot woot.
Hello.
Hey,
Kelly.
This was your first book, Gypsy. And I have to say, it's pretty amazing as a first book.
Yes, I definitely recommend it. It's fantastic.
And everybody I know that has read it was hooked pretty much right from the first page of the sample chapter you had online. So congratulations on
that.
Yeah,
I think I posted that on our Facebook page, that just that opening couple paragraphs alone was worth the book. Worth the price of admission right there.
So what do you want to tell people what this book is about?
Well, I guess the thing to say would be that I have always been most enamored with fantasy and how you can take very real human experiences to an extreme where they become life or death, which I find fascinating and apparently ends up in creating horror novels. So it's a story about a young girl and what happens to her and her family when she becomes possessed by a supernatural being that then drags her into this world of undead and monsters. And that's it.
Yeah, it seems to be a good blend of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror all kind of rolled into one. So it's got a little something there for everyone, depending on what their preferred genre is.
Hooray.
Yeah, and if you don't know Gypsy, you probably would never imagine that she would write something as dark as this book is.
Oh, I've seen her play, so I know.
Yeah, it just blew
yes,
my mind.
She did a 3-act play, and there were independent little playlets inside that. And one of them was a one-sided dialogue of a person torturing someone, and he's looking at the audience.
Nice.
And addressing them, and they are the people that he was torturing, or the person.
Oh,
and that was pretty dark.
So do you get those ideas?
That's actually how I ended up being able to write this book.
Was the play? The play was like the
practice?
Well,
because Andrew, who of course runs the independent publisher that helped me publish this book, mm-hmm. saw the plays and heard that I had this book on the back burner. And he contacted me and said, based on what I've seen, you finish this book and I will help you publish it.
Excellent.
Which is kind of, I mean, how many times in your life do you get an opportunity like that as an artist? The point of getting the work to the people is definitely the weakest point in my arsenal of creativity, and to have someone step in a big wow moment. So,
and so this was a book you had already conceptualized. So mm-hmm. you already had it planned out.
Roughly. Okay. Its first iteration was dramatically different from what you're going to see on those pages. Vastly, very, okay. very different, but yes.
And when you set out to write this, you know, it's titled as book one, of, what is it?
Three. It's a trilogy.
Book one of three of the Dead Souls trilogy. Yeah.
Yes.
So, did you have the whole story planned out and then you chopped this down to book one, or... did you always have it envisioned as a trilogy?
From the first time I conceived the story, it was a trilogy. I have the basic plot points for the entire rest of the story. I have book two pretty much solidly conceptualized in my head. I've been working on it. But the first one was, I mean, I wrote the first book probably almost four separate times where I pretty much started from scratch. I estimated at one point that for every page that I kept and revised to completion, there were at least four or five pages that I just cut and had to throw away. Wow. So it was a lot of writing.
Did Kelly make you do that?
No. I did more of the line editing once it was already mostly finished.
She was primarily in charge of converting me to Oxford commas and things of that nature.
Right. The things I won't compromise on.
Yeah. I saw you made a comment on Facebook about English versus British spelling as well. Or excuse me, American versus British spelling.
Mm-hmm. In my formative years where I was reading a lot of literature, I read a lot of classic literature, and I have a very difficult time not putting in a lot of British spelling and things of that nature. So she helps me be consistent.
Speaking of which, why did you have so much time to read by yourself?
Well, I was raised off-grid in the Mount Hood wilderness, of course.
Now, when she says off-grid, she means off-grid. She was homeschooled. She yes. was out in the wilderness, probably, what, at least a half an hour from the nearest anything?
Yeah, almost exactly half an hour. I was homeschooled. I started writing my first novel, which was awful, because my mother homeschooled us, and she wasn't one of those homeschool moms that you read about who are easygoing and wake up at noon and all that. She was a teacher who quit her job to educate us. So we got up at 6 a.m. every morning and our entire day was regimented. And during the summer, we still had school, but we got to pick some of our topics. And so my school during the summer was a lot of writing. And so I started writing a book that I worked on every summer from about 13 to 17. So it was a huge disaster. And that's how I started.
Now, you said in that you, being out in the woods by yourself, that you mm-hmm. made up a lot of your own pretend friends.
Oh, yes.
And I imagine that has to help a lot with writing the books. And in particular, as I'm reading Sully Beach, that you give not only your own language to colorful language, you've mm-hmm. come up with your own, but just the way you've named all the characters in sort of like a familiar yet made up language.
Yes. That was very much my intent. I wanted the world to feel like it was ours and just slightly off. I'm really fascinated by the connotation that language carries and how you can take a word that and create sounds that you've never heard before, but they still have a feel to them. And so I tried to create a lot of different names or character names that felt familiar or had a feel to them, even if you hadn't necessarily seen them before.
And then you and I know each other, you, yes. me, Kelly, Bill, who's also sitting here silently. We all know each other from the improv world. How much does improv help you with your writing?
I would say the main way that improv helps me with my writing is probably in just forgiving myself for errors. That would be the big one. I actually ended up using a technique I developed more from my dramatic theater experience, which was that I sort of kind of, I guess the word would be pseudo method acted the book, which was a new experience for me writing, in that I immersed myself to the point that when I was writing the more agonizing passages, I would sob and cry and get really depressed, and I would write the violent passages and I'd get really keyed up, and I'd write the more sexy passages and realize I really shouldn't be in a Starbucks and go home. It was just kind of how it was.
So a lot of this played havoc with Husbert, did it not?
Oh, he was very patient. Yes.
Husbert is the portmanteau of husband and Robert.
Yes, yes,
Gypsy's
it is.
Husband.
Am I supposed to make a comment there, or was it just empty space?
You could say no comment if you'd like.
John's taking his drink right now. So.
Yes, the primary role that he played was to try and get me out of the house on occasion so that I did something other than writing. That was his contribution. And then to hug me when I got all upset because people that didn't exist were dying. That was pretty much
it. You cried over your own characters dying?
Oh, a lot. Yes, quite a bit.
That's great.
And if I could say, I think that Gypsy's method acting, as she puts it, of the writing really shows through when you're actually reading it. Because for me, I got so trapped in the world that during those agonizing passages she mentioned, I actually got really angry with her, and I spent a day not talking to her because I couldn't believe she would have done something like that. And then all of a sudden I realized those people aren't real. And the fact that I think she did this to those people means that it's an extraordinary book, that it managed to pull me in that way.
Well, that you can get so angry that something happens to a particular character means you're that invested in it. So
exactly.
That's good writing. Absolutely. That's good storytelling.
I know a couple people who've mentioned the same thing about Gypsy's book, where they just had to put it down after one or two particular chapters where they just were not very happy with Gypsy. But
I have not had that problem. I've been reading it over the last week, mostly when I can find the time, which has been at work, and I steal away and go read a little bit on a coffee break or at lunch. And I've really only started it a couple days ago, and I'm not a fast reader, and I've plowed halfway through this book. So it's good because I can't give away any spoilers based on that. But I love where it's going. You know, I've already met Dog.
Apparently he's the most popular character, which is hilarious. My mom, who's her least favorite parts are the violent parts. Her favorite character is the most violent character.
I was going to say, Dog
strange.
Is born of violence. So.
Yes.
That's a good character. He's got a lot of deep insight to him. Seems like he's got a history that goes way back, and probably there's some other book in there that has to do just with the Dog character.
So yeah. on the trilogy, you said you have the second book, you know, mostly sort of laid out in your head. Mm-hmm. Do you have the whole arc? Do you know where the story ends up, or is that more of an evolving thing?
I know the main points. I haven't strung them together perfectly, but the main, you know, top points of every plot line I know. How I'm going to deliver it terrifies me. I mean, it's really frightening to go, oh my gosh, can I do this again? And I don't know, but I'll try.
I was going to ask you if you think the second effort will be easier than the first, since you've kind of done the process once now.
I have no idea. I'm
there's
gonna have
a lot
to find out.
To.
I know there's people that are like chomping at the bit, like demanding the second book already. So, and yeah. And you worked a long time on the first book, so it's not like they're gonna get it tomorrow. I know that.
Well, I mean, when I really buckled down and started writing this book, it took me approximately from January to September, and I wrote about 12 hours on my days off, and I think 10 to 12, and then about 4 hours on my work days.
Wow.
And wrote it 3 times. And so when I actually lock down and start the next one, we'll see. I might be able to churn it out in about a year, but I don't know. It all depends.
That's a reasonable amount of time. That's how long we usually wait for, you know, our next Netflix binge on some series we care for.
It's one of the spectacular things about having a small publisher is that I'm not locked into a timeline. So if I don't like it, I can start over whenever I want.
And it's nice. So when did you come out with, because when I got the book last month or so, it was on the Kindle version, but now it looks like you've just recently come out with the print version.
Yes.
So, but you're skipping over having, say, a hardcover version of the book, which is really an expensive prospect anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're working on a hardcover right now, and it's almost not even worth it. It's a kid's book. They're so expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to have a Sully Beach hardcover on my coffee table somewhere, but it would cost $30 in order to just pay that off. But it's a really nice looking cover, though. I think it's
gorgeous. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm a little bit in awe of it.
Yeah. And I like the matte finish also. It's pretty nice.
That was
Kelly
widely
and I were both like, not finished. And yeah. Andrew's like, we should print glossy just to see. And we're like, no.
No, I completely agree. The matte finish gives it more literary feel to
absolutely.
A book, you know, it totally does.
It wears better.
It
as
just
well.
Feels it better does. In your hands yeah. when you're reading it, too. Mm-hmm.
It's more classic to me, yes. that matte finish. I really enjoy it.
What other kind of influences do you think informed your writing?
Well, I think there's a very great religious influence to my writing. I think a lot of my writing has very strong themes of redemption, and martyrdom is another one that you see a lot of. And also, I really like moral quandaries and dilemmas. And so I think you see a lot of those. And there's also a good amount of religious imagery that you can see in the first book. And that's going to become even more prominent as the story goes on. I mean, growing up, that was a huge part of my life, of course, was just the Bible and this notion of, you know, the crucifixion and sacrifice and people being tormented forever and, you know, all those fun things to think about when you're a child. So it's something that's stayed with me and definitely informs a lot of my writing.
So we want to thank you for coming here. And yay. If you haven't read the book. Oh, actually, I do want to bring up one more thing.
Okay.
Is it was so far all of your reviews but one have been 5 stars
that
and
guy.
Just glowing. And there was like one guy that gave it 2 stars. And you actually kind of even met that with glee of like, yay, our first, you know, bad rating.
Oh, you have to. I mean, when we did those plays, we had people walk out.
Yeah.
And then trash me on Twitter and then demand their money back. And so it feels like that's how I know that I can be proud of my work, because if someone hates it, and this poor woman from Florida, who her favorite, like the things she reviewed well on Amazon were like the book The Mitten and Bat Hospital and, you know, things like that, read this book and hated it. And then spelled the character's name wrong twice in her review. And it was like Cookie and Dookie. And yes, she was not a fan of the story at all.
Well, that's good. I would think that if everybody liked this book, there's got to be something wrong with it. You know, it just wouldn't be edgy enough for me.
Right.
You know, you don't
right?
want housewives walking around. Maybe not housewives, but you
know. And I'm not going to name names, but I have one friend that I know that had to put the book down and like didn't finish it. So, yeah, it can be too intense for some people, I guess.
I completely understand. And as I started like telling people, you should read this, part of me's like, and please don't hate me. And I've had people say, you know, I'm going to give this to my 10-year-old. And I'm like, oh my gosh, could you read it first? I've had like 5 people tell me they're going to give it to their little kid. And I'm like, just scan, at least scan.
Yeah. So I, the entire time I'm reading this book, I'm like, it's so vivid, the picture in my head. I'm just picturing it as a movie the whole time. Do you have any fantasies about that?
Oh, I've had a lot of people tell me that, and I never really imagined it as a movie.
Very visual.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very visual.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't imagine it as a film because it's so fantastical and there are so many different perspectives. And I'm trying to imagine how you would narrow that down into 60 minutes. And of course, as the author, it's probably more difficult for me to imagine like siphoning it down into that block of time. But if someone wanted to do it, I'd be like, hey, that'll sell more books. Go for it. So sure.
Totally. Yep.
I also wonder if maybe part of why we all have that reaction to it when we're reading it is because of the amount of background work that Gypsy does on this stuff. Because would it be cheating if you talked just a little bit about the second book and some of the back work you're doing on the, like, is that cheating? Is that allowed?
Oh, you mean like just research and stuff?
The research on the boat.
Yes. Okay. So one of the storylines is going to go cross water in the second book, which is very exciting. And it's a challenge because I do immerse myself very much in the environment, and that's not one I'm familiar with. So I'm trying to, you know, research what it's like to be on a ship. And it's so hard because I've never been on a ship, and trying to, like, you know, what would it taste like? What it would feel like? And just started reading Moby Dick again. And, you know, I'm reading up on all these old ships. I picked a three-masted carvel that I'm going to put my characters on. And, you know, I mean, it's just what you do as a writer is you read a whole bunch of really boring stuff, and then the reader sees a tiny sliver of it.
Sounds like you need to get Husbert to help you with a little environmental research and a vacation, too. Yeah.
That would be swell. Let's do that. Who wants to, like, fund me going on a cruise?
Hey, you could get your fan base to donate something in, a Kickstarter or GoFundMe for, hey, this will help the research for the second book. It'll come out that much sooner.
Send me around the world, and before I land again, I'll have book two out.
There you go.
I'll give you $5 for that.
Sure, I would.
Why not?
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the book or anything you want to tell us?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I still don't know how I feel about the first one. I mean, you can ask me
Well, everybody else likes it.
I know, but I'm still, just thinking about it. It's hard to articulate. It's very emotional. And thinking about doing it to myself again, it's hard to imagine. It was a very, very almost traumatic experience to write this story. And now I'm going to do it again. And I will.
Well, I think because you were so connected and the book touched you so much, that's why everybody else responds so well to it.
Which is fabulous, because if they didn't, I don't know what I would do with myself.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming here. It's been a pleasure. Sully Beach and the Dying Light is on Amazon.com. You can get it both electronically and recently. You can now order a paperback copy. There's also SullyBeach.com. That's SOOLIEBEETCH. These are made up names. or go to PageBacon.com to get some links there and more info about Gypsy. And we'd like to thank Gypsy and Kelly for being here and for Bill sitting over there silently as a supportive partner.
Great. Thank you, Gypsy. It's been great.
Thank you.
Now, for those of you in the Portland metro area, you can catch Peachy Chicken First Friday Improvisationals at the Oregon Public House on Friday, March 4th at 8 p.m. And every first Friday, go to peachychicken.com for more information and showtimes. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.